All right, Romans chapter 16 is our text. My mind and much of my energy over the last couple of weeks has been spent in defense of Judge Roy Moore, a man that I've known for over 25 years personally. I used to live in close proximity to all of the former battles that Judge Moore went through, first as a circuit court judge in Etowah County, which is up in the northeastern part of the state of Alabama, Gadsden, the principal city, and then in Montgomery whenever he was twice elected as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, and all of the battles that he fought in those cases, and over the years I was there with him every step of the way. I was with him in his fight in Etowah County. I was with him in his fight in Montgomery. It was a short drive, maybe an hour and a half drive for me to get there, and to I held I don't know how many rallies on his behalf, which I spoke to many thousands of people. I was doing television interviews left and right. I was with him in private counsel and with his family and staff and so forth during the trial. Of course, now I'm many thousands of miles away, and I'm not able to be there personally as I was so many years ago. So, you know, I've done everything I can do and will continue to do that through my columns and through my public speaking. I'm helping Judge Moore personally. I'm sending him a donation, doing everything I can for him. I believe with all my heart, as I told this audience a few minutes ago before we went online, the election of Roy Moore to the U.S. Senate is more important than the election of Donald Trump to the White House in 2016. More important. And now that the Republican Party has cut off funding, it is important that we, the grassroots conservatives and constitutionalists, send him generously everything we can to make up the slack and help him have the ability to continue the campaign to the final line, to the finish line. So I'm encouraging all of you in this room and those of you online, please send Judge Roy Moore a donation. But I've been extremely involved in that from afar, and using all of my means available to help, including ardent prayers on his behalf. And this is Thanksgiving Sunday, so all of this was kind of going on in my mind at the same time. And my heart was drawn to Romans chapter 16 in the last few verses. The Apostle Paul names 29 individuals that he is thankful for. 19 men and 10 women. Verse 3. If I said the latter part of the chapter, I meant the first part, the vast majority of the chapter. Verse 1. I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, which is a servant of the church, which is at Centurion, that you receive her in the Lord as becometh saints, and that ye assist her in whatsoever business she hath need of you. For she hath been a succorer or a helper of many, and of myself also. So Phoebe is the first in the list of 29 names. Receive her. Assist her. I say to all of us, the days of sitting on the bench, or in the case of Christians, sitting on the pew and doing nothing, are over. They're over. Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Assist her. If you don't have the same gifts or calling as another person, you can help the person who has the gifts and the calling. Everybody needs help. No one can do it all by themselves. I cannot do it by myself here at Liberty Fellowship. And the people that are working hard in this fellowship cannot do it by themselves either. They need help. Assist her in whatsoever business she hath need of you. If she asks you to do something, church, do it. Help her. She needs your help. Greet Priscilla and Aquila, a husband and wife. The wife is named first. My helpers in Christ Jesus, who, verse 4, have for my life laid down their own necks, unto whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. He doesn't give us the details of how they did this, but it had to be in either Corinth or Ephesus. You can go back and read the book of Acts, historical accounts of what Paul endured in those two cities. Priscilla and Aquila were helping him in both of those places. So whatever happened, it most likely occurred in either Ephesus or Corinth. And while Paul didn't give details, he said enough. He said, this couple, for my life, laid down their own necks. That phrase speaks of the guillotine or the axe, which was a common form of capital punishment during the Roman Empire. Priscilla and Aquila, in order to save the life of the Apostle Paul, faced the guillotine or the executioner's axe. That's what he meant. That was not just a figure of speech. That was a literal experience. Their necks could have been chopped off for what they did. So we can only imagine exactly what it was that they did to help the Apostle Paul. But they did it, and they risked their own lives, and they knew when they helped him, in whatever way it was, they knew when they did it, they were probably going to die. They knew they were going to die. God spared them, and they didn't die. But they very easily could have, and they knew it when they did it. And he said, I give thanks to Priscilla and Aquila. And oh, by the way, the Gentile churches give thanks too, because Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles. And if Paul would have been killed, if he had not been protected by Priscilla and Aquila in whatever way it was, if he had not been protected by that married couple, the Gentiles would have lost their apostle. I thank God for Priscilla and Aquila. So he thanks the Lord for Phoebe, for Priscilla and Aquila. Likewise, greet the church that is in their house, speaking of Priscilla and Aquila. Salute my well-beloved Epaphroditus, who is the first fruits of Achaia unto Christ. By the way, in all of the scholarly commentaries I've read from the men I trust, they suggest that several of the men that are listed here in Romans 16 were actually part of the 70 disciples that Jesus chose. You remember that in the life of Christ, right? When he chose 70 men, sent them forth two by two. And according to these scholars, many of these men, including this man perhaps, were part of that group of 70 evangelists that Jesus called and sent out while he was on the earth. He's called my well-beloved, who was the first fruits. In other words, he was one of the first men saved under my ministry when I was in Achaia. He was one of the first ones that responded to the gospel. Greet Mary, who bestowed much labor on us. Again, it doesn't say what the labor was, but it was a whole lot of it. We don't know which Mary this was. This obviously wasn't his mother, or the Mary of the Marys of the Gospels. This would have been another Mary here in Rome. So we don't know who she is except her name. Mary, who bestowed much labor on us. Much labor. Tireless labor. Arduous labor. She worked hard for the Apostle Paul to help him in any way that she could. Salute Andronicus and Junia. Again, this is probably a married couple. My kinsmen and my fellow prisoners who are of note among the Gentiles, who also were in Christ before me. That is, they were converted to Christ before the Apostle Paul was. He said that they spent time in prison with him. So the preaching and the teaching and the things that Paul did and he went to prison for, this couple was also imprisoned with him. He recognizes their suffering as fellow prisoners. He calls them kinsmen, which means that not only were they perhaps of the tribe of Benjamin, from which Paul was also, but it could mean that they were cousins of the Apostle Paul. Very likely that these had a blood kinship with the Apostle Paul in a distant manner, probably again as cousins. So he mentions these two people. Greet Amplius, my beloved in the Lord. Another man he calls my beloved. Salute Apelles, approved of Christ. This, some suggest, might be the great Apollos, spelled differently. We're not really sure if this is Apollos or whether it was another man altogether named Apelles. Approved in Christ. Salute them which are of Aristobulus' household. Aristobulus himself may not have been a believer. He may not have been a Christian. He was a wealthy man, a very powerful man. And he had a large servant household. And Paul is greeting the members of the household. Apparently, within the household of this man were many Christians that Paul had won to the Lord. Many of them were faithful, dedicated believers, men and women. And so he doesn't name all of them, but he identifies them as being from the household of Aristobulus. Salute Herodian, my kinsman, again, perhaps a cousin, this man. Greet them that be of the household of Narcissus, which are in the Lord, or maybe Narcissus is probably the better pronunciation, which are in the Lord. Again, Narcissus, it is thought to be, was one of the richest men in Rome at that time. He was very powerful politically. He was a wicked man, an evil man, if the historians have it right. He was a very ungodly man who eventually, because of all of his chicanery and deception and betrayal of many people in order to benefit himself, etc., etc., he was eventually killed by others because of his wickedness. But apparently in his household, again, there were many believers. You never know where you're going to find a child of God. Even in the most evil places, in the most sinister places, you'll be surprised to find God has his witnesses there in those places. Here we are introduced to two different men, neither of whom were believers, one of whom was notoriously wicked, but within their household, that would be either their kinfolk, it could be children, it could be brothers or sisters, it would definitely would have been the servants that were employed by them, the workers, the people, and so forth that were in their charge. Many of them knew the Lord, and Paul was recognizing them, even though he didn't go into each one individually. Salute Tryphena and Tryphosa, two ladies, who labor in the Lord, who labor in the Lord. They're not lazy, they work in the Lord. Salute the beloved Persis, another lady, which labored much in the Lord. So here in this verse, he is saluting these three women. He's acknowledging their work, their labor, their help, and how important they are to the work of God, giving them due acknowledgement here in the Holy Scripture. Salute Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother and mine. Rufus' mother, what Paul is saying here is Rufus' mother was like a mother to me. So she would have been elderly, and she took Paul under her wing like a mother would, and she helped him and loved him and prayed for him and did everything she could for him. And Paul looked at Rufus' mother as his second mom. His mother and mine. Doesn't mean that Rufus was his brother. He wasn't. It means his mother was like a mother to me. Salute Asyncritus, Phlegon, Hermas, Patrobus, Hermes, and their brethren which are with them. Men named in verse 14. Salute Philologus and Julia, probably another married couple. Nereus and his sister, and Olympus or Olympas, and all the saints which are with them. 29 names. 19 men and 10 women. I thank God for them, Paul says. As I read through that list and I read the heart of Paul as he paid tribute to these otherwise unknown people, except that he told us who they were, I got to thinking in my life of the men, especially, and women who mentored me and showed me and helped me in a way that without which I would not be here today, and I would not be the man that I am today. The compromisers and the quitters and the moaners and the groaners and the complainers and the naysayers and the critics and the cynics, they're a dime a dozen. They're a dime a dozen. The earth is littered, unfortunately, with these types of people. They never accomplish anything except to discourage a man of God and to destroy the work that God has given him to do. That is the sum total of their life's existence. Discourage people, defeat their work, and sadly, in the generation in which we live today, it seems that that is the majority of people surrounding us. I'm just being frank with you. Most of them are not helping anything. And if you let them, they will discourage you. And you will quit. You will give up. If you let them, they will defeat you and take away your resolve, your enthusiasm for the work. They are professional spoilers. And the devil knows exactly who they are. And he knows exactly where to sprinkle them around the work of God so they can do the most damage. But amidst this kind of character, or lack thereof, God has some real champions. The Apostle Paul, in just this short passage, and in this list of 29 individuals, plus the households, of which we don't know how many people that would be in each, so, but obviously it would be many, many more than 29. These people helped the Apostle Paul do the work that God had called him to do. And in the case of Priscilla and Aquila, they laid their necks on the guillotine for Paul. Without Priscilla and Aquila and the other names that Paul lists for us, there would have been no Apostle Paul. There would have been no Book of Romans. How many other books of the New Testament would not have been written that he wrote? had it not been for these names and the other names that he mentions in other books that he wrote, other letters that he wrote. He mentions a few others here and there by name. Without them, the work of the Apostle Paul would not have existed. There's a verse in the Old Script, in the Old Testament, maybe a couple of verses, about one man shall chase 1,000. I think there's some different applications from that passage, but I think one of the applications is for every 1,000 critics, complainers, naysayers, for every 1,000 of those kind of men and women that are used of the evil one to try and discourage and destroy the man of God and the work of God, one man, one woman can stand in the gap and can balance out the work of 1,000 imps of Satan. One righteous man, one righteous woman can do more than 1,000 that are working against the cause of Christ. Liberty Fellowship, that should encourage your heart. That means we don't have to be a majority. We never will need to be a majority. If one can chase 1,000, why, look how many thousands and multiple thousands of people that this small fellowship has on the run already. Just think about it. Think about it. In order to be able to qualify for a list like this, you have to be of the character of a Priscilla and Aquila. You have to be willing to lay down your necks to do what you know is right. Greatness is determined not by how much one gains, but by how much one risks. I'm not talking about foolishness. I'm talking about faithfulness. Think about it. Think about the men and women of history that we most admire. Most of them are admired for what they risked or for what they lost. If we are not willing to lose something precious to us, we can never show up in a list like the one we just read. And unless we are willing to lose something precious to us, we can never be one of those righteous men or women that puts 1,000 to flight. The men that have shaped the course of human history, and the women as well. Joan of Arc comes to mind. Were men and women who were willing to risk everything for a cause they believe in. History is not made by the masses, the sheeple the fish who swim downstream. It's made by the bold, the courageous, the visionaries, the ones who have a commitment that transcends personal wealth and benefit, who fear no man, who hate bribes, people that are indefatigable and literally lion-like in their tenacity and courage for a cause. Those are the ones that change history. I was thinking about the names that I could list of people that I have personally known and learned from. I don't know if I want to start going through. I know there's names that I would probably leave out. But I got to tell you, I thank God that He allowed me to be born in a man's home in which that man was one of the most courageous and righteous men that I have ever met in my entire life. I saw fearlessness as a little boy. And even though the appreciation for that courage matured as I did, even as a 12, 13, 14-year-old, I recognized the courage that my dad had in the work that God had given him, and I marveled. As I got a little bit older, I was able to travel with him to the prison in which he ministered every day, 5 days a week. I got a chance to see the environment that he voluntarily put himself in every day. I saw some of the most powerful hate you can imagine. And I became familiar with men inside that Indiana State Prison in Michigan City, Indiana, that could have cut my dad up into 100 pieces and enjoyed every minute of it. It didn't take me too many trips with Dad to that prison to recognize that my dad volunteered to go into a den of lions every single day, Monday through Friday. And he did it between the LaPorte County Jail and the Indiana State Prison. He did it for 35 years. For 35 years. He put himself in that environment. Defenseless, walking in amongst the inmate population, just like you and I would walk in amongst the people in a mall. You go into a prison and you walk in, you walk among the population of the prison, just like walking through a mall. His life was threatened numerous times. I remember before I was a teenager, Dad instructed me on certain things to watch for at the house. I grew up, my dad taught me growing up to be on constant alert mode. I've never been able to understand people that live a life of inattention and people that are not alert. I don't get it. I see people out and about in the community, and I watch the way they sit in a restaurant, the way they act, the way they totally oblivious to their own safety and the safety of their family and children. Easy targets. I don't get that. My dad told me, son, when I'm not home, when I'm at work, you watch for this, and you watch for that. And you keep this handy, and you keep that handy. And I mean, before I was a teenager, I knew what it meant to be watchful and to be alert to potential danger and threat around me. I was a kid. I've had a sixth sense for danger and that kind of thing ever since I was a little boy. And it was put there by my father. I remember one time my oldest son and I went to a pawn shop in the town that we lived in down south, which was common for us to do on a Saturday whenever he and I would get together. He shares my love for guns and shooting and all that kind of thing. And so we would often go to pawn shops and gun stores and things like that, father-son stuff. We went to this pawn shop that we'd gone to a couple dozen times or more. We weren't in the pawn shop more than 2 minutes, and a sense came over me that was overwhelming. And I didn't know what it was. There was hardly no one else in the store at the time. Again, very familiar environment. We'd been there many, many times, knew the owner well by first name. But a sense of danger swept over me. My son was, I don't know how old he was then, maybe 12, something like that. And we hadn't been there 5 minutes. And I was feeling so uncomfortable. I cut the conversation short, and I grabbed my son's arm. I said, we have to go. And he was shocked because we'd always stay and talk. And, you know, we love to talk guns and love to talk, you know, shop and all that kind of stuff. And so normally we would just stay and talk. And I said, we got to go, son. We have to go. We had not left that shop but just a matter of a few minutes. And two men came into that shop fully armed, and they came in guns blazing, and they killed that shop owner, and I think one more person that was in the store. killed him dead, stole a bunch of stuff. If we had been in that, if we'd stayed in that shop, there's no question my son and I have both been dead. His courage, his boldness. I publicly thank God for him. And the Lord has given to me a handful of mentors that I don't know that I should name them all, that were equally courageous. It cost them a lot to do what they did. If I give you the name, some of you would I don't mean you personally, but people that would hear it, they would raise an eyebrow, and they wouldn't think very highly of these people. Because they didn't go along with the status quo. They refused to compromise their convictions in order to get ahead financially. They were willing to sacrifice their future success, their future political success, financial success. They made decisions based on conviction and honor and truth, and they made a course. They set on a course that was opposite of the way the rest of their peers were going. And they paid a price for it. Roy Moore is such a man. This man has risked everything, time and time and time again, to do what was right by God and by the Constitution of the United States. To this very hour, he is paying a price that few could endure. I really believe that whenever this first broke and McConnell and the neocons and the Republican Party in D.C. and the Democrats got together, they decided they were going to destroy this man. I really don't think they truly understood the man they were dealing with. They thought that he would crumble under the pressure and sulk away. Whenever Roy Moore was a army captain in Vietnam, his troops would refer to him affectionately as Captain America. That was his nickname in Vietnam, Captain America. Okay, have you ever known Captain America to run from anybody? Roy Moore's not going to run from anybody. And he still, I want everybody out there to know, and that's why I'm saying support Judge Moore with your prayers and with your donations. He needs financial help. You read the New York media, and they've already written him off. oh, he can't win, it's all over for him. Doug Jones is 10 points ahead, blah, 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 blah. And like you were telling me, you go to the surveys that they're quoting and try to look for the facts backing up their statements, and you can't even find the facts. They're not even there. I tell you the truth, and I'm not making this up. Roy Moore has a good chance of winning this election. A good chance. I tell you something else this has done. Every time, you know, these politicians are so good at what they do. One of the pundits. Oh, Matt Drudge. Supposedly conservative. Matt Drudge said Roy Moore should bow out. He said Roy Moore should leave politics to the professionals. You see, that's the problem we have in Washington, D.C., and in our state capitals many times. We have professional politicians running things. That's not a blessing. That's a curse. We don't need professional politicians. We need honest, hardworking men and women of integrity and character who believe in the Constitution and who will go to their respective public office and do what is right, not what is politically expedient. They are so good at covering their tracks. They are professionals. They really are. They are professionals. They know how to cover their tracks with the voting public. They know how to make it appear like they're something that they're not. They know how to vote on certain issues in such a way that will not affect their popularity back home, while at the same time advancing the agenda of the other side. And the leadership works with these individual congressmen and senators on how to do that. And so most of the time, the issues are routine, and the bases are covered. If you're a Democrat, you do this and you do that, and you go back home and tell the people this. And if you're a Republican, you do this and you do that, and you go back home and tell the people this, and they all fall for it. Oh, yeah. If you're a liberal Democrat, oh, yeah, we got a great Democrat. We got a great representative. And he's selling out. He's selling out his constituents. And if you're a Republican, they go, oh, man, we got a great Republican. He's a great conservative, blah, blah, blah. And he's selling out the Republican. But they're selling out both constituencies constantly. They're not in it for the people. They're not in it for the Constitution. They're not in it for liberty. They're in it for their own pocketbook and their own success. And everything is judged and gauged according to that. And they're so expert. But once in a while, every blue moon, something comes along that creates a can't hide situation. Oh, they don't like that. But it happens every once in a while. They can't hide. You got to pick a side. And I'm not talking about incidental, mundane matters. I'm talking about things that are not only politically powerful, but they are spiritually powerful. You got to understand that there's more at work inside the political establishments of this country besides liberals and conservatives and Democrats and Republicans. There's more at work than that. There is good and evil, right and wrong, God and Satan. And I know no one wants to talk about that element of it, and a lot of people don't even believe it. But once in a while, in a blue moon, something comes along at the national level of such amazing contrast and of significance that there is a divide, a chasm that separates, and it has nothing to do with political party, and has nothing to do with liberal or Democrat. I was telling our folks in the preliminary part of the service before you joined us online, one of our men here in the congregation put together a list of some of the senators and a few others that were either supportive of Judge Roy Moore or were opposed publicly to Roy Moore. For the sake of keeping it short here, give an example. Here in the state of Montana, we have our two senators. One is a Democrat, John Tester. The other is a Republican, Steve Daines. Between our two senators here in Montana, the Democrat senator, John Tester, has come out in support of Roy Moore. And the Republican senator, Steve Daines, has come out in opposition to Roy Moore. So when these things happen, you can never second guess where these people are gonna come down on whatever side. You never know. But let me tell you what the Roy Moore phenomenon has done. It has put the spotlight of truth on several people who cannot, from now on, can never hide. They can never hide from this. Of course, the establishment neocons that we already knew were establishment neocons and have been confirmed by the Judge Roy Moore phenomenon should not really surprise us. Ivanka Trump, Paul Ryan, John McCain, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Mitt Romney, each one of them phonies for the cause of liberty, dangerous to the cause of liberty, and now forevermore will be recognized as an enemy of the cause of liberty. But what about the phony conservatives that have been outed by Judge Roy Moore? They couldn't take it. They had to speak. It required them to speak. The powers that be demanded that they speak. They could no longer couch their conservatism in language that fools people. They had to take a stand. And they did. They took a stand against the most courageous politician probably in our lifetime. A man devoted to the representation and the defense of the Constitution, to which he swore in office an oath several times to protect and defend. But these men, they showed us who they really are. I'm talking about Sean Hannity. I'm talking about Ted Cruz. I'm talking about, yes, Steve Daines. I'm talking about Matt Drudge. I'm talking about Alex Jones. I'm talking about Mike Lee. These men have forever shown us their true character and their true inner motivations. Can you imagine Sean Hannity getting on television on Fox News and telling Judge Moore over the air, "You have 24 hours to prove your innocence or you must get out of the race." Really? 24 hours to prove your innocence. Hey, you know what? These accusers of Roy Moore have had a couple of weeks to try and prove his guilt, and they haven't done it! Sean Hannity, you are a joke, sir! Call yourself a conservative. Call yourself a Christian. You're nothing but a wolf in sheep's clothing. Ted Cruz, shame on you. Steve Daines, shame on you. Matt Drudge, now we know what Matt Drudge is all about. Alex Jones, we know what he's all about. Mike Lee, staunch conservative senator. No, I don't think so. Thank God for Rand Paul. In the face of all of this witch hunt against Judge Moore, Rand has come out strong in support of him. Our Democrat Senator John Tester has come out in support of him. The Republican governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, has put her entire political future on the line to defend Judge Roy Moore. God bless Kay Ivey. The divide has occurred. If Roy Moore gets elected, and maybe I can even say when Roy Moore is elected, it's going to be the shot heard round the world politically in this country. It will probably mean the end, thank God, of Mitch McConnell's position as Majority Leader of the U.S. Senate. There are already several senators that have said they're not going to run for re-election. I predict that if Roy Moore wins, that there will be several others that will decide not to run for re-election. It will encourage the hearts of millions of people around America who have given up hope, and they will realize, you know what, maybe I can run for state senator, state representative, or county commissioner, or city council. If Roy Moore can do it, and if they can't beat him, and if he can stand through all of that, then maybe I can do the same thing. And I predict that there is going to be a groundswell of people around the country, if Roy Moore wins, that are going to start engaging the political process and running for public office. And 5 years from now, who knows how many miniature Roy Moores will be all over the United States in various political offices. By the same token, if they are able to defeat him, it's going to put such a discouragement in the hearts of so many people that would love to be able to do in like fashion as he has done, but may not feel that they can because of the way that he was destroyed by the media and by the Republican establishment. I'm praying for him. I'm using every bit of my influence, however limited it is, to support him. I'm personally donating to his campaign. I'm encouraging everybody I can to do the same. Let's do everything we can and then leave it in the hands of God. But as I come to this Thanksgiving Day message, I read those names that Paul read. They put their necks, risked their necks for me. Here's the list of people that have helped. I thank God for my dad. I thank God for Roy Moore. I thank God for my preacher friend, Greg Dixon. Only church in America that the federal government has ever seized and confiscated. Can you imagine? He was the pastor of that church. I've seen him stand up in front of the most hostile audiences like granite. I've seen radio and television interviewers, members of the media, become so angry at Dr. Dixon's pointed and principled positions on live television or radio. I've seen the media interviewers get so angry that they throw down their microphones, they take off their headpiece, and storm off of this platform. I've seen it. I've seen him stand in the presence of the so-called religious right 30 years ago. And look them all in the face, one at a time, and tell them the truth about the position that needed to be taken, but which they were too afraid to make for fear of losing donors and contributions and so forth and so on. He's up in years now, and his health is failing, but he's still able to write and still able to speak and still got a mind sharp as a tack. And I thank God for my friend Howard Phillips, who's in heaven now. One of the darlings of the Republican establishment in Massachusetts. A Bostonian one of the most brilliant men I've ever known. He was picked by President Richard Nixon to head up one of the federal departments. And you know what he did after he got that position? You know what he did? He started doing everything in his power to dismantle the agency that he was the head of. And he got the boot from the Nixon White House. And he lost his friends. Friends of a lifetime. All of his so-called conservative Republican buddies turned on him. Because he wouldn't go along with the Republican version of big government-ism. He started the Constitution Party. It started out as the U.S. Taxpayers Party, then became the Constitution Party, which I ran for vice president in 2004 and president in 2008. Guy was fearless, absolutely fearless. He created a movement in this country. Him and people like Ron Paul. Ron Paul voted no on so many bills, they started calling him on Capitol Hill, they started calling him Dr. No. The establishment got to where they left him alone because they knew there was no reason to bug him. They knew what he was going to do. They knew that there was nothing they could do, nothing they could say, no bribe. There was no intimidation possible. They knew what he was going to do. He was going to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And he never compromised. Never took a salary in 23 years in Congress. Never voted for an unconstitutional bill. Many times you go back and look at the Ron Paul years, and if you go back and look at the congressional record and the votes, you'll see, like, you know, votes of 434 yeas, one nay. You'll see that often. You know, they were appropriating money for some, you know, feel-good thing, you know, and they always do, you know, it's always popular, you know, for these things feel so good. Oh, it's good. It's so mushy, and everybody, oh, how can you be against that? Dr. Paul would get up, and this happened over and over, he'd get up and talk to his fellow congressman and say, you know, I think we ought to help this group of people, or whatever the situation was, put up this memorial, or, you know, whatever it was. Oh, I think we should. I think it's a great idea. I think they really deserve it. And I will contribute the first donation, and I invite all the rest of the members of Congress to join me, and let's do this for this person. But we have no right to demand the U.S. taxpayers do what is not constitutional for us to spend. And of course, the Congress will never shell out their own money. They only shell out our money. That's the only money they know how to spend. I've watched him for 20 years do that. And there's a whole lot of people I've met over the years, lesser known names, I mean. Everyday, ordinary people just like you and me, that they're doing the same thing. Principled, courageous, honorable, and they sacrifice whatever it takes. They put their neck on the line. Some of them lose money, some of them lose jobs, some of them lose position. Some of them lose a political seat. Some of them may lose reputation among the good old boys. But after people just like Paul names in Romans 16. So my message today is, I concur with the Apostle Paul. I thank God for people like this. They're the only reason we have any liberty left in our country. They're the only reason why the work of God is able to go forward. They're the only reason why I'm in this platform and you're in this auditorium. And those of you that are watching online are in that audience. It's because of people like this. I want to be somebody like that. And I pray that each of us will want to be somebody like that. So while we are counting our blessings this Thanksgiving, let's not forget to thank God for the people, some that have gone before us and some that are still among us, that are of these sort, of which we can be so thankful and so proud. May God bless you. Let's stand for a word of prayer.